Welcome to the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. This is episode 41 for the 10th of January 2016. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul, and you have tuned in on what could be the biggest show for the Countdown ever, as we are joined all the way from across the other side of the world by Nick and Justin, the Epic Film Guys. Gentlemen, welcome to the Countdown.
Welcome.
Whoa! Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, thanks all a lot.
All right.
Appreciate it.
It's an absolute pleasure. We are so stoked that you would give up your Saturday night to join us here on what is a Sunday for us to record about a new release film, The Revenant, and then count down Leonardo DiCaprio's best 10 films.
I'm so excited I might crap my pants. This is awesome.
I might even actually put my hand on my pants and just start playing to myself. So
you know what? No promises. Paul sitting next to me, but I don't give a shit.
We've talked about this, Wayne. Okay. We have an agreement.
Yeah, okay.
After the podcast.
We'll see how it goes, okay?
So, how is the US of A on this Saturday evening?
It's dark. It's kind of chilly. Actually, no, you know what? It's unseasonably warm, I think. It's probably about 40 degrees outside right now.
All right. And my mental calculations, it's like 8, I don't know, like
that's Fahrenheit.
6 or 7 degrees Celsius, something like that.
Wow, really?
Yeah, probably, yeah. Yeah. It's relatively warm.
Whereas we've been averaging 95 here for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, hotter than ball sack over here.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
It's been unpleasant, it has. But today it's finally broke. We've got 2 or 3 days before it's back to 105 later in the week. Anyway, we're not here to talk about the weather. We are here to talk about movies.
All right, well, I'll talk to you guys later then.
We have one shout-out to do today from a loyal listener, Jared, who did put through his best 10 films of the year, and I forgot to talk about it last week, so my apologies to Jared. We're just going to count them down real quick, see what you guys think, Epic Film Guys. Jared's 10th best film was The Gift. Mm. Have you guys seen that?
I have not.
I actually did not get a chance to see that. I'm actually kind of pissed that I didn't get to see it. I heard some decent things about it, and I love Jason Bateman, so it's on my list to see.
Yeah, it's a different film, quite intriguing, and not probably doesn't go the direction you would expect. Mm. Number 9, and I know this was on, because you guys counted down your 10 best films very recently. I know this was at least Nick's, if not Justin's as well. Ex Machina.
On both of our lists, yeah.
Both lists, yeah.
Yep. I just picked up the Blu-ray for that tonight.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah. And it was also on our guest host for our best 10, Ali's.
Mm.
Alejandro.
That's it.
Alejandro.
Number 8, The Martian. I know that was high on both of yours.
Oh, I loved it. Well, it wasn't on Justin's. Justin, wasn't that your number 10?
Yeah, and you gave me a whole bunch of shit for it as well.
I deserved every bit of it, too.
I should still slap you for that.
All right, number 7, It Follows, which was high on my list, but no, was it on yours, Justin?
It was my favorite horror film of last year, definitely.
Mm.
Yeah, and that's a very easy argument to make. Number 6, Sicario,
which I still haven't gotten a chance to check out.
Nick, you haven't seen it.
I know.
Number 5, Straight Outta Compton, which I saw this week.
And I'm about to see.
It was very good. Did you guys see this at all?
I did, that was on my top 10 list, actually.
I have not.
Mm.
Number 4 probably technically doesn't make either of your lists because it came out here after January 1st last year, and that's Birdman. Inarritu's obviously previous film to The Revenant, which we'll be talking about very shortly.
Yeah, if we were to count that on a best of 2015 list, then yeah, it probably would have made our list. But no, yeah, that would have been 2014 for us.
For you guys, yep. Number 3, Kingsman Secret Service. I think there was a lot of love between the four of us. A
lot of love on that movie.
A film that has less love, a bit more divisive at number 2 on Jared's list, Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Oh, well, of course, because he's human.
Perfect, perfect. It's right at my number 2 as well.
That's not perfect.
I'm
right at home,
baby.
That was too much.
Paul and I are both sitting on a stellar 3 out of 5 stars or 6 out of 10 stars, however you want to rate it on that one.
To shout out another podcast that I listen to, oddly enough, the Horror News Radio, one of their reviewers also gave it 3 out of 5 stars and has copped a whole lot of crap from his co-reviewers, Nick, so we're not alone.
But 3 out of 5 is not bad, though. And I told Nick...
You gave me so much shit for that in our episode.
6 out of 10 isn't bad either. You could have given it 3 out of 10, so it's fine. Whatever. That's fine. The case is closed, people.
Not to open old wounds too much. And look, number 1 was also my number 1. I think it was Wayne's, 3 or 4.
He was in there, yeah.
Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, which is my number one as well. Rightly deserved. Yeah.
I ignore any best of 2015 list that doesn't have that film in the top three or so.
Wait, was yours what?
I don't know. I'm not sure. It might have been top five. I don't know.
I think it was number six. There you go. So we're totally ignoring Wayne for the rest of the podcast.
See, Wayne liked Star Wars more than I did, so Wayne doesn't count.
Yeah, we go up and down.
Hey, Nick, you don't count. Get out of here.
All right. Well, look, that's it for the shout-outs of the day. I think we should waste no further time and get straight into reviewing.
You know what? Before we do that...
Oh, sorry.
I would really like to know. The Epic Film Guys, part of their podcast, anyone who doesn't listen to them normally,
of course.
Is that they review the beers they're drinking while they are reviewing movies.
Thank you for the reminder.
No, not at all. So I want to hear what you guys are drinking. Nick, tell me about it, man.
All right. Well, I am drinking, and Justin knows this brewery quite well. This is Southern Tier. Never had this beer before, Justin. This is actually 2X Smash. This is a double IPA that they do.
What?
Single malt. Yeah, single malt and single hop. It's a very citrus-forward hop aroma. It's actually really, really good, but it's very laid back. It's not at all what you would expect from Southern Tier. For you guys down there in Australia, Southern Tier's beers are very, very hop-heavy, so they're very, very bitter. This one... citrusy up front, but very, very smooth. It's actually a very good beer, Justin.
So what? And how many IBUs?
Does it say on here? I haven't checked it in on Untappd yet, so I will have to get back to you on that because the bottle does not indicate. So yeah, that is what I'm drinking. Justin, tell us about what you're drinking.
Well, to make me feel at home with our brothers in Perth, I decided to go out of my way this evening and find a beer from Australia that would fit my needs.
So cool.
And it is... the Cooper's Brewery Original Pale Ale. It's actually not bad. Now, I wouldn't put this on my top five list by any means, but it's a pretty good beer. I definitely enjoy it. I'd actually probably have it with a burger, maybe at Alamo Drafthouse when I'm watching a decent movie. So, yeah, it's pretty good. And that's Cooper's Brewery Original Pale Ale.
Probably fair to say you wouldn't save it for a really good movie, so... yes.
So, actually, I don't know much of...
yeah, it has to be a double IPA for me for a really good movie.
Okay.
So, are you guys drinking anything?
Well, I am, and it's a little bit of a sad story because I wanted to represent a local boutique brewery, perhaps Little Creatures from down Fremantle, which is a 30-minute drive from where we live. But no, I didn't. I had beers in the fridge from Christmas, so I grabbed them out of the fridge. I brought them here, and it's not quite a shout-out to you guys because I think it's probably the dirtiest beer that the Americans will only ever drink occasionally. It's Corona.
Corona, no lime.
Corona's no lime, no lemon.
No shame, no shame.
Yeah. So I've totally dropped the ball on this one. However, I am at least drinking a beer, even though it's Sunday morning. Wayne, what
and that's,
are you drinking?
That's the best part.
I don't actually drink much beer, so I'm just shooting some heroin. I'm going to get a vein here. So, yeah, but I
that's not true.
Did you buy it from Justin underneath the railroad track?
Yeah, it was in the dark web.
No, you are drinking dry ginger ale.
Yes, I am. I don't want to talk about it. It's just
baller.
All you guys' knowledge on beer and stuff.
No, well, that's great. Thank you, Justin, for that. And Southern Tier, I don't know if I've ever seen it in any boutique liquor stores here, but sounds like I should keep an ear out for it.
Yeah.
By the way, Justin, 60 IBUs, because I just checked that in on Untappd.
Oh, that's... so, okay. All right.
But the IBUs are kind of buried behind the malt. Like, the malt, it says on the bottle it's a special pale malt, so whatever you want to take from that is good. But enough about what I'm drinking. We're not here to hear what I'm drinking.
We're here to talk about movies.
Let's talk about a big one. One that has a big chance of an Oscar. The Revenant.
Yeah, Alejandro G. Iñárritu, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hardy, Domhnall Gleeson, Will Poulter.
Who wants the lead off? What about some early first impressions, gentlemen?
Yes.
What did you think of The Revenant?
Nick, you go right ahead. You saw it before I did. I saw it in theaters this last Thursday, so why don't you go right in with what your first thoughts were?
Yeah, and I actually posted this, I think I texted Justin right after I saw it, is that Lubezki needs to win a best Oscar for cinematography for this film, because this film, and I think everybody here would probably agree that this film is beautifully shot.
Amazing scenery. Beautiful.
That was my immediate takeaway. It was, and I actually did some reading on this. They only shot in natural light.
Natural light in Canada.
Wow.
Yeah,
in Canada at first, and then they had to move the whole thing to Argentina, I believe.
Yeah.
Because the snow melted in Canada because the summer approached. I did my homework today, guys.
Very good. Very impressed.
I'm glad you do that on their show, because you don't do it on ours.
All right, but what did you guys think of the movie? First impressions?
Well, I go first, because I think Wayne may have a slightly different
perspective.
I thought this film was amazing. Visually, one of the most stunning films I've seen in as long as I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
Gripping, tense, riveting for a 2.5 hour movie to hold my attention so much. I looked at my watch once the entire 2.5 hours, which is a little signal to my mind as how engrossed that I was.
Though in a really good movie, you'd never look at your watch. One guy talking.
Two and a half hours, I usually would look at a watch.
I didn't look at mine once. I'll honestly.
For me, I'm an every 10 to 15 minute, especially in a back half of a movie I'm not enjoying. In Point Break, I looked at my watch every 30 seconds.
I can understand that. Honestly,
That's completely understandable.
Commend you for watching that.
No, I don't commend us. It was my fault.
I think you were probably, you caught some kind of fever. Did Wayne get some bad heroin and that's what made you go see that?
I know, it's inconsistent dealers.
So what about you, Wayne? What did you think of The Revenant?
Look, I agree. This is a beautiful, beautiful film, and you could just sit there and watch it purely for that if you had to. Amazing scenery. It's funny you say, Nick, that they only shot in natural light, because I actually thought it had, like, this otherworldly quality to the cinematography. It looked quite... It was maybe because I'm obviously not used to looking at that kind of scenery. I loved that. That was foremost the thing for me. It's beautiful, and that's what you go... I don't know, to see stuff for, in my opinion. For me.
Exactly.
Performance-wise, really just great from everyone. No one dropped any kind of ball. Leo is the bomb, isn't he?
I love Leonardo DiCaprio. I think that's why we're all here, because we all love Leonardo DiCaprio.
Definitely. And
Paulie's giving us a little stick over here.
In this film, I love Leonardo DiCaprio for absolutely sure. He's incredible.
I can't wait to hear his list.
Nor can I.
We'll get there.
I loved him, and honestly, not to cut you guys off, because Nick did cut me off. I didn't get to mention anything I felt about it. But
go for it, Justice.
I gotta go.
Because nobody cares.
I do this quite often. I break my way through, kind of like I'm being born out of the vagina. I'm just pushing my way out. In this instance, I waited. And in the U.S. right now, it's a big deal with the screeners being out. A lot of people have already seen The Revenant because they really, really just wanted to see it. They didn't want to wait. But I made sure that I waited to see it at my local Alamo Draft House.
Yeah,
they have 4K screens or 4K projectors. So really wanted to see this film, you know, in the format that it deserved, large format, you know, 4K. And I was stunned. I was literally just like out of my mind, stunned by the beauty of this film. Yep. Like, honestly, like I really afterwards, I sat down and thought about it in my car for like 20 minutes after I left the theater, just sat there and tried to think of another movie that I had seen shot in, you know, natural locations that looked this beautiful in the last 10 to 15 years. Like all around, not just certain scenes, but like the entire film throughout from start to finish that looked that fucking awesome. So like for me, first impression was definitely a really good one. But I'll let you guys get into performance a little bit more, and I'll interject my feelings on that.
For you to say that you stopped and sat for 20 minutes and thought about it, that's a pretty powerful advertisement for the film. And whilst I didn't
not to interrupt you, Paul, but Justin, did you come up with any film in the last 10 or 15 years that really was that raw visual testament?
No,
or was
honestly,
this kind of alone?
I couldn't, because a lot of films that are shot in natural environment, you can tell the difference between when they have those natural environments and when they switch to either a set or it's, you know, back into
there's
a
still
city
lighting
or,
rigs
I mean,
that they
like,
bring
literally,
in.
This is
still,
nature.
Yeah.
This feels like the time that it was supposed to be in the film. I was never taken out of the film once. And usually, even though we do see CG animals in the film, you know, we see the bears, you know, we see elk, we see buffalo. It felt real to me. And even though I looked at it and knew that it was CG, I never once got taken out by that. So for me, that was astounding. I literally could not believe that, because I always have that thought. It's like inside myself, it has to come out like, oh, okay, that's CG. But it didn't happen in this for me. So, like, I think that they really, really, what they were going for worked very well. Yeah.
I totally agree on the bear scene. That bear scene was incredible.
It was. It was actually
that was like a very tense scene to watch.
Oh,
too.
And pretty much in up right up until a certain point of the scene, all one shot.
Exactly. Yeah. I noticed that. Yeah.
Yeah. Regular listeners will know how much I like to espouse the virtues of a one shot, but this was
who doesn't love a one shot
above and beyond. Given the level of CG that went into that scene, and for it all to be shot like that was staggeringly amazing.
That a good point on this, since we're talking about one-shots. I was told that it opens on a really magnificent one-shot. I don't think it did that. There was a few.
It opened
small
on one
of
the many sort of dream sort of sequences.
Yeah, and look, it's like you're in. It's like you're in a 360 kind of VR.
The
kind
whole
of thing.
Shot of the opening battle when the Indians attack the camp. And everything that was, and the camera keeps doing these sweeping pans around the entire battlefield. Like I said, Lubezki, if he doesn't win Best Cinematography, I will like violently protest.
Well,
as Justin said,
I said all right.
Today.
Yeah, I mean, literally,
it's
the
oh my
one
god,
thing.
It's so beautiful.
Yep, it's kind of hard. I think the technical accomplishments of this film are hard to put into context with other films. I haven't seen a lot of the other sort of Oscar nominated, or they're not Oscar nominated yet, but Golden Globe nominated and potential Oscar nominees. But I cannot for the life of me imagine another film being as technically accomplished as this movie.
Yeah.
So you guys don't get to see Hateful Eight until later in the month, if I'm correct.
Yeah, 2 weeks away. And I think just other films they're talking about as potentially being Oscar nominees, like The Big Short and Carol and things like that. It just cannot
That's a whole
be.
Different thing. Yeah, it's no way.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah, exactly. And that's my main thing coming out of The Revenant is that, and I've watched a couple of the other Oscar-nominated films so far, or that will be nominated, Golden Globe-nominated, I should say.
What have you got or seen, Justin, out of those?
Well, you mentioned The Big Short. I got to see that earlier this week. I got to see Steve
That's
Jobs.
That's playing here, too. I can't wait to see that.
I got a handful others I still have to see. I want to see Carol really bad. Nick, did you see Carol?
I have not had a chance to see it yet, no.
But either way. Okay. But either way, like, I think the scope on this film is above and beyond anything, you know, compared to those other films at all. So, I mean, for me, this film is I'm in the corner of this film. I want to see this film, you know, get what it deserves at least.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. I would agree with that 100%. But, I mean, we got way off track on performances, so...
Back to performances. Okay, so what did you guys think?
Justin, I'm going to let you go first.
I'm glad that you actually tossed it my way for once. The funny thing is here is that, you know, I won't lie at all. I'm a DiCaprio dude. I like DiCaprio, all right? But I like Hardy too. I like Hardy actually just as much, if not maybe slightly more. It's kind of hard for me because I kind of came up on Leo a little earlier than Hardy. I didn't see Bronson until right before The Dark Knight Rises, so I didn't know as much about him other than seeing him in Inception, so... But honestly, I won't lie, I think Hardy stole the show a little bit for me as far as performance. I mean, granted...
I think Hardy had the best performance in the film.
Yeah, DiCaprio definitely... Yep. This is, and I'll get to this on my list here. It's one of the best things I've seen him do, and I'm very happy that he did it. It's right up his alley, and he fit it perfectly. I have no complaints about what DiCaprio did. I mean, obviously, the lack of dialogue for him kind of sets him back a little bit from Hardy, who had a whole shitload more lines, and he delivered them all so great. And there were scenes in that film, particularly after he had abandoned Glass in the woods, you know, and he's I think it was around a fire, and his eyes, the intensity of his eyes. I love Hardy's eyes, and it just, I'm like, wow, dude, I think Hardy just gave the best performance of this film. So for me, of course, all around, you know, Domhnall Gleeson, I liked everyone in the movie. I had no complaints, and I hate saying this, I think Hardy just kind of stole the show for me.
Well, it's interesting, because for me, what struck so hard wasn't the performance, but the length that DiCaprio goes to in this movie.
Of course.
Now, I hear what you're saying, that Hardy has a lot more dialogue, he's got more people to bounce off, he's selling the character that way. But for someone who's not usually overly kind of influenced by acting performances when I sort of rate a movie, like, it's difficult for me to tell how good an actor is or how bad an actor is. I'm much more on the technical side of things. But Leonardo's commitment to this role, he went through hell filming this movie, just watching what he had to do, laying in snow. I mean, we could go on and on about it, you know, floating off down a torrented sort of river or the rest of it.
Oh, it was nuts.
Another actor would have just gone, too hard for me. That's a great part and that will do wonders, but I don't want to do that. I want to do a film where I stand in a room and I do give that monologue and absolutely own it in that particular way.
Physical movie.
So for the physicality he brings this role, Leonardo just gets a huge, massive tick for me, and he sells it. I think he's wonderful. There's nothing wrong with Hardy. I think he's excellent as well. These two are incredible, but I think Leo deserves a nod for sure.
I agree.
He deserves a nod, but does he deserve to win?
And I'll give you the answer right now. Yes. And the answer for that, without having seen the other performances, is because he hasn't won for other things that he could have.
I agree with
it's
you.
It's time. It's time. This is what the Academy does.
It is
exactly what the Academy does. And they award for the body of work.
Yep.
He went for this on purpose, too. It's quite obvious. He really put everything he had into this. The dude wants an Oscar. I mean, he's got a Golden Globe. The dude deserves it. He's definitely put in more than enough effort. He's that
LeBron
one actor.
Can change teams to go and find and win an MVP ring. So how come DiCaprio can't chase a film that he knows will be Oscar bait?
Yeah, no, exactly. I agree completely.
There's no problem with it.
Yeah, he's punished nonstop in the film. And as a performance, that's quite fascinating. Especially, like you said, because he doesn't talk much. I agree with you, Nick. The Tom Hardy, though, for me, I actually forgot Tom Hardy was in the movie. And it's hard to tell.
So did I. So did I until like an hour into it. And then I remembered and realized, I'm like, shit, that's Hardy. I completely, it completely escaped. And I think that's a testament to Hardy on how into character he was.
It's because he wasn't doing the Bane voice, man.
That is true.
He wasn't doing the Bane voice.
You forgot because he wasn't doing the voice.
Plus everyone looks the same because they're all bearded up and stuff.
Well, he just looks the same. He looks like ass, because he'd been through his trauma, and that's why he hated the Ray. And
I bet he really got into character. I bet he just fucking stank, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, whilst I'm defending Leo, I would also like to say Tom Hardy should get a nomination as Best Supporting.
Yeah.
Oh, I agree. I totally agree. And I'd love to see him win, too. But, I mean, honestly, just knowing the films that I've seen so far with supporting actors, it may be tough for me to make that decision for Hardy to grab that. I won't get into that too deep because I know you guys still have some films to see, but I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Yeah. And then we got some of the bit players like Domhnall Gleeson, who...
Really,
how many times did this man pop up in 1 year?
Yeah.
Ex Machina.
I didn't realize he actually pops up... and Justin, I know this film would make your top 10 list if you could go back and redo it, now having seen The Revenant. But Domhnall Gleeson's the most... I think he appears the most in our top 10 list. He was in Ex Machina.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was in... of course, he's in Star Wars...
General Hux,
The Force Awakens. So, yeah.
That's right. But he plays the... Look, what I kind of liked about it is the captain of the expedition is not an arsehole. He's an honorable character, and
he very much is. Yeah,
in this kind of film,
could have gone one note with this character so easily, and nobody really would have cared. But Gleason, you know, he definitely gets to add some layers to this character. And you're absolutely right; the writing doesn't out and out make him an asshole. And just screw Leo, let's leave him out there.
No, so that
Hugh Glass,
that's
not Leo, but
which is great. I think. We got there's a bunch of guys who are there just to survive, and fair enough, why wouldn't they be? You've got Fitzgerald as the one asshole, and then everyone else is sort of nuanced and layered, and it works.
But it's an interesting
But I'll say this about the script, too, is that, you know, Fitzgerald, Hardy's character, is an asshole, but you can also kind of understand his perspective.
Given what he's gone through.
Look, given his backstory, yes, but... The way he starts off immediately trying to tell
he's
the captain
the
that the glass is wrong, and had they gone his way, the film would have ended in 15 minutes, of course. Mm. So you're immediately put offside with him, and even when you get his tragic kind of backstory and you think, okay, now I understand his hatred of the Native Americans, I still hated his guts.
Which is supposed to, exactly.
The film worked in that particular way.
And when at the end,
the fight, the battle between the two, by that point in the film, you definitely want to see him get his ass kicked. The intensity by that point in the film, the build up to what happens at the end, you know, how much you hate that character at the end, it works perfectly.
Yep.
So he sells it definitely in that respect.
Well, look, any other performances or characters you guys wanted to mention?
Not so much performances and characters, but I mean, we've talked about how much we like the film and all the things we do like about the film. I was wondering if there's anything that we did not like about the film, or anything that we thought, you know, maybe dragged it back a little bit.
I definitely had And this happened because when I saw it in the theater, I knew it was going to be long. I love long films, but I will not lie. I felt that middle of the film dragged a little bit too
Thank
long
you.
For me. I think, yes. I think they could have cut. Honestly,
I won't even say it was the middle of the film.
I mean, yeah. Well, all right. For me, I think it was the middle because that was the point.
There were
too
many scenes of Leonardo DiCaprio being carried around on
yes!
a stretcher.
There was that. And
I feel
think
that portion
there was
of the film
too many,
really kind of dragged.
There was too many scenes also. I felt like, even though it's beautiful scenery, and I love the way it looked, I'm like, okay, so we see him next to a fire. He wakes up. We see him walk a little bit. We see him next to another fire. He wakes up.
That's
we
it.
We see some other stuff happening, a little bit of stuff happening, then another fire, then he wakes up. It just, you know, in theory, that's what I'm saying.
Yes,
literally,
that took it away from me.
That's
kind
of how it felt to me. I'm like, okay, you can cut a couple of these days and, you know, kind of just push
yes.
it along a little
yes.
bit.
Yeah, look, mm-hmm. I'm not going to defend the film that way. I agree. It could shave 15, 20 minutes off and be even better. But I wouldn't say so much it was those scenes because there's no way he comes back from that bear mauling. And if he's popped up and running around like Bruce Willis having been shot 3 times within 5 minutes, then yeah. the film loses any and all credibility, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I agree with
yeah,
that.
You're
I had
right,
to suspend
right.
disbelief, you know, immediately regardless, because that was the one thing I got. And I knew this was going to happen, but like, I literally had to keep telling myself, okay, he was mauled by a fucking bear, all right, like brutally.
Yep.
And he's on, you know, he's on death row. He's about to die. You know, so I already had to, you know, imagine that this was possible. So
how many
me,
other people had that moment where, you know, he's in the bear attack and the bear attack's over and then he crawls to his
yep.
rifle and then he picks up the rifle and aims it at the grizzly and all you're doing is sitting there and be like, don't shoot the fucking bear. And
yeah,
the bear gets
the
his ass
thing.
Kicked even
well,
more.
Well, it did shoot it, but it was coming back at him at that point. So it wasn't as if he,
well, yeah,
yeah he, it was gonna, it was done with him. It was always intended to come back. It went to attend to its cubs. So
that's why I think that scene was really cool, is because it's like the attack is so fucking harrowing,
yeah.
right? You're like, holy shit, this is so bad. I keep on going, and then it stops.
Oh yeah,
it was
such a yep. powerful scene to watch.
Oh, I
think that's what adds to the suspense. I think that's what actually
yeah.
added more to it because I did think it was done for a minute. Then I'm like, okay, so he's not that bad. Then I'm like, wait a minute, the bear is coming back. And then when you know it's coming back, and he's starting to go for the gun, and anyone that knows any knowledge about large bears, grizzly bears
which
especially,
we have
if you shoot them once with one gun, it's not going to do a fucking thing other than piss it off. Even if it bleeds to death, it will still keep attacking you until it dies.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, we got nothing here. Like
we got
that.
Nothing. I mean, he did shoot it in the neck, which is good because if you shoot him in the chest, just yeah. like you said.
Well,
just
I was hoping he was going to shoot it in the face or in the, you know, right in the skull. But it looks like I think
even
he
still,
got it in the shoulder.
A bear's
right?
skull is so thick.
I think he got it in the head. I think he shot it right in the face.
Did he?
Yeah, it was like I think it was in the neck or in
yeah,
the head. Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was like. Well, maybe I'm wrong, but I saw it bleeding from the side of it. Probably because
the grizzly bear's skull is very thick, and their hide is also very thick. So even, I mean, that was a musket.
Exactly,
you know,
it was a
flintlock talking
musket. That would just piss on a human.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
It's not really going to do much damage, especially to an animal of that size. You're talking a 1,000, 1,200, 1,400 pound animal.
Yeah.
That's already enraged because you're anywhere near its cubs. So the only negative I had about the film is also the biggest positive about the film. I felt that they turned this, the atmosphere, they turned it into its own character.
Mm.
And it was that beautiful, but I felt that overshadowed everything else about the film. The film was so wonderfully shot. And they spent so much time shooting the environment
yeah.
that the characters and the story get kind of lost in it. And I mean, to a point, it's supposed to do that, I think. But I think that it's kind of like Paul said, you could trim 15 to 20 minutes of this and get an even better film out of it. And I just think that they got kind of caught up and swept up in how much they were shooting this beautiful,
yep.
beautiful mm-hmm. landscape. And the story and the characters kind of got away from them just a little bit.
The other thing that got a little bit heavy-handed for me, I would keep all that stuff in that you guys have described
mm-hmm.
if they could have just cut back on a little bit of the symbolic dream sequences.
Because I didn't get there's one dream sequence where she's hanging over him.
Yep.
I thought that looked kind of ridiculous.
Yeah,
I don't know why. We went
back there again and again. I know it's fever dreams
and it's
his body
it's
recovering.
Yeah.
And that's fine for two or three scenes, but did we go 6-7 times?
It went a lot.
And I'm not sure
yeah.
it did anything other than emphasize what we already knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, this director, I think that based on his other films and everything, what seems to matter to Inarritu is how we pick ourselves up after we've been shattered and how do we continue.
So like Birdman.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? That's mm-hmm. his thing. So I think on that level, he's really, really selling and perhaps overselling the struggle. And that's why we got like, okay, I get it.
Man's
really
will to survive.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, on that level, I should have expected that it would be a little drawn out. But like I said, like the pacing was the only issue for me, just like you. I think that we could have done with a few less struggling scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't ruin the movie by any chance, by any means. So, but yeah, that's what he chases in his work, I think.
Mm. All right. Any other thoughts?
I got to throw this out there. So are we going to do ratings?
Yeah, for sure.
You guys do ratings? All right. So I'm very interested to hear you guys' ratings. Actually, Nick didn't even give me his rating. All he said to me is after he saw the film, and he was very excited to hear my thoughts, you know, while I was seeing it, is what my rating would be. So I'm interested to hear what you guys rated it.
I'm very excited. But I want to hear you guys.
You want us to go first?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
It's your show, man. You guys are the show.
I'm going to get hated on, so why don't you go first?
Look, I'm honestly vacillating between a 4 and a 4.5 stars, so 8 out of 10. This would have been, I think, my second.
And this is big for Paul.
Oh,
I listen to you guys' show a lot, and yeah. Paul is stingy as hell.
Big time.
Stingy as hell.
Yeah, I think last year, if I think back at my top 10, only the top four films got 4 stars and above. Only one film got 4.5 stars, and I maintain my rule, which is a film can never get 5 stars straight off the bat because it has to be that good 2 years later or more.
If you become a professor,
I do not have the same. See, my film rating system is if I sat in a theater and I was completely blown away in every way possible and I loved it just incredibly,
yep,
10 out of 10.
That's my
rating system. That's what I do.
Yes,
I've only given a 6 or 7 films 5 stars in my life.
So yeah, I know. This guy's so hard to please. I mean,
he's stingy, but yeah, that's yeah.
So, but this really did. We didn't mention this, but we went to our local cinema, which is it's pretty good these days. Except the air conditioning wasn't working. It was a 95-degree day.
Yep.
It was uncomfortable as all.
So it was your will to survive watching the film, watching Leonardo DiCaprio try to survive.
Yeah,
in this brutal environment.
Again, I have to say, I kind of forgot about my discomfort. I was so drawn in by this film. And yeah, maybe not the very last half hour, but probably the half hour before that was a little slow. So that's why I'm 4. Look, fuck it. 4.5 stars for The Revenant.
Yes! Wow!
Wow. Okay.
I reserve the right to change that after I buy it on Blu-ray and watch it later in the year.
It won't have the same effect. Shit. You already know that it won't have the same effect.
Yeah, if you can't be as
for
good,
me it
but
wouldn't.
I have to say that my TV screen is large-ish, and I have a pretty good surround sound system, so I could do some justice, but not as good as a cinema.
I think next year, maybe when Ultra HD comes out, if I buy a 4K TV and it comes out next year in that format, maybe for me it'll hit that mark. But for me, the quality is everything. I'm kind of a quality snob.
Yep.
But that's me.
Yep. All right.
I hope when you get that 4K TV, you watch The Force Awakens again and you realize that it's not anywhere near as good as you think it is.
No, actually, it was shot on film and it was shot beautifully, so I'm sure that I'll love it just as much, if not more. Hey, maybe get that 10 out of 10 rating now. I'm pretty sure.
You're so full of shit.
I'm pretty sure they're not done with their ratings.
No, we got to get Wayne's.
Okay.
Let's hear it, Wayne.
I'll take advantage of the out of 10 thing that you guys do. I'm going to give it 7.5. Now, I'll tell you why.
Ooh.
It doesn't go
no,
all...
No, you can't give a half.
Sure I can. That means 3.75.
Justin does the same thing, and it pisses me off. We already do a 10-star rating system, and then he halves that.
So you want to mark it? Oh, for God's sake. All right, 3.75. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And good luck putting that up on Letterboxd.
I know. But
you're going to have to commit one way or the other.
I know, fucko. Wait, here it is. This is, like we said, technically great, wicked, awesome, a little patchy here and there, but... you know, ultimately wicked. I understand that, and I agree with that. The thing is, it's not quite my movie. The thing that makes me not give it, like,
No one was dressed well.
No! Yeah, well, whatever. Man, fuck you for Christmas.
DiCaprio could have trimmed that beard, like, a little bit. He could have shaved his stick down and clipped it a little bit.
Yeah, why did he take care of that beard?
It ain't about no damn costume.
Hey, I actually take... That's horrible. Don't even say anything about the beard, alright? I don't want to hear anything about the beard.
Oh, you and your goddamn beard.
My beard's almost longer than his. My beard's longer than his, okay?
I think, Justin, your new logo for Epic Film Guy should feature a beard.
Yeah, it should just be a beard.
I'm going to do that then. Nick, that means you have to grow one too.
I don't know if it'll ever look quite as hobo-ish as yours. But anyway, Justin, what is your rating of the film?
Not a perfect rating by any means because, you know, when it came to the pacing, I think for me, you know, there were some spots that I kind of dragged a little bit too much for me. But I'm going to give The Revenant a 9 out of 10.
Oh, half stars again. Jesus.
If honestly, and you had mentioned this before we did our top 10 list last week, you mentioned it would probably be on my list, and you're definitely right. Something would have had to have been pushed out.
Where would this fit in if you had to throw it in?
It's kind of hard to say.
Really
that, putting me on the spot like that, I'd have to honestly take time to think about it. It probably would, honestly, it might even probably have pushed out Jurassic World out of the top three and put it up there.
Oh, jeez. It couldn't have fit in at number two, possibly, maybe?
No. No.
It would have been my number
two
film for
sure. This film for me, and I keep telling people this, is for me, experience is everything. And this is an experience film. I saw something and felt something that I had not seen in a long time, if ever. I'm a huge fan of old, you know, 70s, 80s cinema. And I love when they used to shoot on location in Alaska or Canada or in these harsh conditions. They did it a lot more sparingly back then. But this was completely done in that. And I appreciate the efforts that were put in so much. I was never taken out of the film. I loved all the performances. And that score, man, that score just kept me in the entire time. So I had no real complaints other than a few minor pacing issues. So I absolutely love The Revenant. I think that it should be fully appreciated in every award ceremony, Golden Globes, and the Oscars. Mm-hmm. There it is.
Oh, look, everyone should see this show.
Yep. Great call, Justin. Well played. And Nick. Your rating, sir?
4 stars.
That's an
so
eight.
That's an 8 out of 10 for our normal rating system. But yeah, 4 stars.
8
for
out of
10.
Me. 2 out of 10. 7.5 out of 10.
I didn't think I'd ever be the poll.
So Nick, yeah, you're not very far from Wayne's rating.
Yeah, though. So tell us Nick, why.
I think it was just, as I said, there was just the pacing issues early in the film after the bear attack, where it's just scene after scene after scene after scene of mm-hmm. DiCaprio being dragged across the landscape on the stretcher. As you said, Paul, the fever dreams got to be a little bit much. And like I said, I think that they did such a great job. And again, Lubezki, please win Best Cinematography at the Oscars. 100%. I really hope it happens. But I think that they just kind of got lost, and they wanted to shoot the scenery so much, and that they invested so much of their energy in shooting the scenery that they kind of forgot about everything else. So yeah, that's it. 4 stars out of 10. Yeah, 4 stars out of 10. 4 stars out of 5. Sorry, I'm
on the
countdown.
Yeah, we're not used to this. I'm sorry.
All right, but yeah, 4 out of 5 stars for me, and I know everybody else had that moment in the film as well. When he cuts open the horse
after
they jump off the cliff, the tauntaun in Empire Strikes Back. I know everybody else had that moment where they connected to it.
Yeah. Yeah, but they didn't get naked in Empire, though. Leo got physically naked, man.
That is very, very true.
Why didn't he get naked? Not to dirty up
his clothes? Well, he doesn't want to dirty up and disgust his clothes, and he get the body heat proper as opposed to filtered through a layer of clothing.
Right.
There's a small part of me that really wants the film to have been so real that Leonardo DiCaprio actually slept inside of a horse carcass, but I don't think it went to that extreme.
Probably
he
not.
Mentioned that he did, but
give him the Oscar right now.
He mentioned that he did, but I don't think that he did. But here's a question I had to ask you guys, because, hey, we're all here. We all saw it. We all just did our rating. Did any one of us actually read the book that this film was based on?
No.
No.
Nope.
I did read, however, the true story, or the story about
Hugh Glass.
The book is based on, you know. Oh. But he does end up, you know, crawling to safety, you know, miles and miles and miles, and ends up saving himself.
Yeah, without spoiling it, even that part was...
Spoiler
very
alert, Leonardo DiCaprio is actually Supreme Leader Snoke. I just said it. There he goes. There it is. Leo is Snoke.
Done now, yeah.
Done.
On that bombshell... We should go to a couple of promos before we come back then to talk more, Leo, with our best 10 films.
Hey, welcome to the Classy Little Podcast promo.
We're your hosts. I'm Emily.
And I'm James.
What wine are we drinking this week?
It's just a promo, so I thought we didn't have to drink a bottle of wine.
Well, let's open a bottle just in case.
Okay. Did you bring a cheese to accompany it, too?
What cheese pairs well with a promo? Promalone? Promazon? Pro-mozzarella?
Oh, goodness. Well, as you might have guessed, every week we have wine and cheese on our show.
And we pick a different topic for each episode. We find out interesting and quirky aspects of it, including the history, the etiquette,
the controversies and injustices surrounding them.
Okay, we know, James. Everything is terrible. How would you describe it?
It's fun and informative, but not too informative or didactic.
Yeah, but we don't use words like didactic.
No, never. Anyway, you could find us at classylittlepodcast.com.
Or on your podcatcher of choice every Wine Wednesday.
Cheers!
Cheers!
Hello, everyone. This is Nock from the Geek Yogurt Podcast. Listen to us every Wednesday on iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube. You can check us out on Twitter at Yogurt Podcast or find me at Archer's Nock. Now, back to the program.
So that was two members of the Podden family network of podcasts. So we're not actually network, that's not the right word, is it, Nick? It is a movement which you helped get us into.
That is, yeah, it's actually we're a community, and I actually posted this on Twitter earlier, but we're a family. We're a community, like-minded yeah. podcasters that are just looking to help each other out, looking to promote and looking to grow. So hashtag Podden Family on Twitter, check it out.
Yep, it's a pleasure to be a part of that, and thank you to you guys for getting us in there.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Nobody belongs in it more than you guys do.
Because we are small and niche and on the other side of the world.
We both definitely fit the criteria of an indie podcast, for sure.
Absolutely. Okay, so today's countdown is the best 10 Leonardo DiCaprio films on the back of what you've just heard, The Revenant review. And, well, we have our special guest, the Epic Film Guys, still with us, and it would only be appropriate to throw to them for their number 10 first. Justin, why don't you lead us off with your number 10 best Leo film?
My number 10 best Leo film is going back really far back to the beginning of his film career. You guys may or may not remember this film, but it features one of the best actors of all time, Robert De Niro. This is This Boy's Life.
Oh, okay, right.
Not on my list.
Not on my list. I've never seen it.
Not on mine either.
Nick's never seen it, I don't think, either.
You're one of four, man. One of four.
I had to go back far because, honestly, this is probably the first actual film I watched with DiCaprio in it. And I always thought, even as a younger guy, you know, myself, watching it, I always thought he was a really, really good actor in it. So that's my number 10. Nick, what's yours?
All right, well, my number 10 is far more recent and far more well-known, I guess. It is Christopher Nolan's blockbuster 2010's Inception, where he played Cobb. Yeah.
Number 10?
Number 10.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
Do I have to come over there and slap you? 10?
I'm guessing this is on everybody else's list somewhere.
Could you slap him more than once?
I'm going to kick you into space, man.
This is my number 10, and it's not to take anything away. Let's preface this whole countdown with the fact that we all love Leo, except for Paul, who's probably got some issues. We'll get to those later. Yeah. I absolutely love this film, but the best performances in this film, I think, are probably Leonardo DiCaprio and, well, Tom Hardy's been mentioned in that circle as well. But I think that the better thing that carries this film through, I'm tripping over my words here, excuse me, is the script. And I think Nolan's script here is so ingenious, and that he presents something that could be really confusing and that it would be easy for a lot of people to get lost, but he presents it in such a way, like literally the first hour and a half of this film is exposition. And he completely lays this out for everybody so that anybody that's watching the film, whether you want to invest in the story intellectually or not, you can get into this film. And it's such a brilliant film. I love DiCaprio in this. I love Cobb. I love his character. And since this is on a lot of your other lists, I'll let you guys talk about it.
Well, see, I think this is the most ambitious movie I've probably ever seen in terms of, like this is the
absolutely
most complex thing, complex. And you, yeah, like you said, he actually presents it in such a manner that you can engage. And I still find
it's very digestible.
Yeah, but I still liked it, even though I was confused. That's hard to do. So, no, I agree. It doesn't hold up quite as well to repeated viewings, because I've seen it a few times. But
really?
I
would completely disagree with that.
I also
disagree as well,
So you guys look at this thing? I was probably looking for holes.
Three times.
I could watch that movie 100 times. I love that film.
I've watched it at least 10-plus times, at least.
Whoa, really? Well, see, that's the thing. Yeah, I think probably the reason that I didn't watch it that many times is because I've still watched it about three or four times. It is a really long movie, you know how I feel about that. But It grabbed me all the way through it, so that's why, I guess on that level it does hold up, but in terms of the technical, like, oh, why did this happen and that happen, I remember having more questions the second time. No, not
no
for
such
you.
Qualms.
Not
this is one of the most ingeniously inventive films I've ever seen.
The script for this film is brilliant.
It's
no surprise at all, it comes from the same two guys, obviously the Nolan brothers who wrote Memento, which I think is one of the best mind-bending scripts ever made.
100% agreed, yes.
Yeah. This is slightly different, and I think what you said, Nick, is right. Slightly more digestible, and they do spend a lot of time laying it out for you. Not to clarify any confusion, because the film ends on a deliberately ambiguous note, but it is one of the most powerful, visually engaging films I've ever seen. I think, yeah, the script is the real winner. And I should add that when I ranked these films today for the Leo Countdown, I did not rank them on the basis of Leo performances. I ranked them on the basis of how much I loved the film that Leo was in.
You too, yeah.
Mine's opposite. Mine is based on the strength of Leo's performance.
Okay.
How much I love the film definitely factors in there, but I'm going solely off of Leo's performance, and I think that a lot of the smaller characters, who admittedly you don't get enough of, and his name is escaping me now, but he plays...
Cillian Murphy?
Yeah, Cillian Murphy. Thank you, Justin. Cillian Murphy's character arc and his character in this film is just amazing.
Yeah.
And Pete Postway, I think this is his last film before he passed away.
I think so.
And just their character arc and their character dynamic, he opens the safe and he pulls out, you know, of course they're in the dream sequence, like three layers down or whatever, but he pulls out the pinwheel, and that's what causes the inception. That's what causes the idea to be planted in his head. I think, like I said, I think this whole thing is brilliant. And I think in a lot of ways that DiCaprio is a vehicle for that. I don't know. There were just a lot of other Leo performances that I liked better. And I love Leo, but I just, for this film.
I agree with you. I can see that, Nick.
Yeah.
If you're talking just about a Leo performance, I guess I can let you slide
on
number 10.
And that's why my list is probably going to mix a little different than you guys' is.
It will.
But hey, that's what it's all about. So
that's right.
I'll pitch it to you guys. Go ahead.
All right. My number 10 is an Edward Zwick film from 2006, Blood Diamond, which I liked a lot.
10.
Embarrassing confession. I have never seen this film.
Okay.
Neither have I.
I want to say this. I liked it a lot, but it has subsequently gone completely out of my mind. All I'm left with is this sense of, that was a powerful film. That was good. Leo was good. Yes, it deals with the South African...
That's the thing, though. His sapphire accent is wicked. It's really good. Like,
was he dressed well as well?
I have heard that about the film, that his accent is really, really good.
Which is really tough to do, that one. And I think that movie there, yeah, it's on my list for sure. It was so rough because it was, you know, South Africa. It was Africa, actually. But
I didn't say South Africa, it's Sierra Leone.
Sierra Leone, his character is a complete badass. He's kind of like a... I don't know, ex-mercenary, he's doing his own thing, but he does really, he's not a good man at all, but he's very engaging to watch, so it's definitely one you should probably check out.
Yeah, look, if you haven't seen it, I think it's well worth a watch, but if you sat me down in front of it and watched it now, I would think of, it's 2 hours, 20 minutes or so, the film, I would say I would only remember 30 minutes thereof. I remember the major plot beats, but everything in the middle is kind of...
No, this one hit me a lot harder.
Away. Okay, yeah. So it's much higher up your list, but no worries at all. Okay, all right. That's my number 10.
Okay, well, my number 10 is... I think I will catch some heat on this one, but I'm quite happy to just push it forward. It's Titanic.
I thought about putting this on my list, but it didn't make my list.
I don't think there's any problem with this. I don't think there's any issue with this at all. You go for it.
I'm putting it out there right now, Wayne. I'm not going to give you heat because I love Titanic.
It's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's an easy target now for some reason, like years later and stuff. But at the time, I was really impressed with it, and it was... Like,
there's a reason why this film made as much money as it did and why it has such box office longevity. There's a reason why it is. It's so masterfully crafted. Cameron, I mean, say what you will about Cameron and say what you will about Avatar, which is a different discussion entirely, but Cameron is a fucking master craftsman. And he knows how to weave everything together to make a film completely engrossing. And going back to Nolan, like we said about a digestible, intelligent blockbuster, this isn't necessarily intelligent in any of that regard, but it's got amazing performances. It's very beautifully photographed.
It's
even though it's a 3-hour movie, it doesn't feel like it's 3 hours long. I'm sorry, I cut in on your thunder there, but
Shut up, Nick.
So it's not in your list, Nick?
It is not in my list. No, it did not make my list, but I just wanted to bet. Now, I don't want him to think he's going to get heat from everybody. Oh my God. The list is here.
Nick, shut up right now. I'm going to come over there and shove my big fat fucking cock right in your fucking mouth, down your throat, and shut you the fuck up. Okay?
That's like a 10-hour drive for Justin. I'm not too worried about it.
Let them talk.
Well, it's only about an hour's for his cock.
Get out of here, man. Nick, I'm sorry. He just comes out, man. I don't think he's kind of pissed at you. He likes Titanic.
I'm sorry,
Wayne. I want to hear you talk about it.
As you were saying.
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, like he said, you know, I hate long movies, but this one didn't feel long. And for me, that's what you got to do as a director. Yeah, look, Titanic was great, and I walked out feeling impressed, even though it's kind of a love story.
And I'm not going to pick any primarily, so I'll jump over the epic film guys here just to say it's my number 9.
It's your number 9?
And it's my number 9 purely because of the last hour of the film where there is carnage and chaos galore. I could jettison the first 2 hours of this film and not have a whit of care.
I think that's why it's good, because you got that whole crazy last hour,
yep,
where before it was just beautiful and then it became exciting. So, you know.
I'm not saying
you know what my favorite moment in the film is, and I can't even remember the actor's name now, but he played the guy that built the Titanic, and it's the scene where, you know, Rose and Jack come into the room when it's flooding and he's standing by the fireplace and he fixes the clock, and he played the Sydney's father in Alias as well, but
Victor Garber.
Yeah
Victor Garber, exactly, thank you, Paul. It's I love that scene. That scene is so it's such a brilliant I fucking love that movie. It's not on my list, though, so I'm going to stop talking about it.
I'm just going to go straight to the one scene that I remember. It was on the trailer. It's when the boat is now...
Of course,
its back end is up, right up in the air, and a dude falls off, and he bounces off three things in the propeller.
The propeller, yeah. Of course you like that.
That bit made me laugh every single time I saw it on the million
times. And I remember
thinking
you were an insensitive prick. That poor man got hacked up by a damn propeller. Anyway, but that was, number 10, Titanic. I'm glad that some of you guys are on board with that.
So back to you guys for your number 9.
I think we're back to Justin now. Yeah, you're number 9.
Yeah, Justin.
All right, I'm going to read the description of this film and see if anyone can guess what this is.
Here we go.
Who's eating Gilbert Grape?
Nope. Nope. That comes later for me, but...
Okay. All right.
Come on, I got to do this, and I want to see if anyone can guess this. The tiny furball aliens that will eat anything or anyone set
Critters
their sights...
Critters 3.
Damn fucking right, it's Critters 3.
I've not seen Critters 3.
Yeah, not on my list.
Of course it isn't. But it's so bad that it's so good. I love the Critters movies. And just knowing that DiCaprio is in a Critters movie. It's one of his...
Funny.
I'm pretty sure it's actually the first film he did. If it's not one of the first actual full motion pictures he did. I mean, he was on Growing Pains.
It was definitely one of the first,
and some other things that he had done. But
yeah, Growing Pains was his break, I think.
Even though I like the first Critters the best out of the three, just knowing that DiCaprio... The legend that he is as an actor is in a Critters movie. I have to put it on there. Maybe it's a tongue-in-cheek reason, but I don't give a shit. I love the Critters movie, so number 9, Critters 3.
Thank you
3.
For doing what I was tempted to do, and I didn't do because I was afraid I'd get mocked.
Hey, man, I love old crappy B-movies so much. If you guys listen, you guys know, so I don't care. I throw it Nick's way because he doesn't know what the fuck I'm talking about half the time.
Not a clue.
Much like myself, even though we do the show me that smile again.
Oh, show me that smile.
Yeah, we like all that stuff. So. I pulls my BV guy back up, guys. So, but that's okay. Interesting.
Yeah, nice pick. Very fun.
Very cool.
Nick, your
turn. So we're on to my number 9, and I'm sorry, Paul, but I kind of warned you away from this movie because you did not like Romeo and Juliet. This is by the same director, Baz Luhrmann. This is 2013's The Great Gatsby.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, wherein he played... Go ahead, Wayne.
Please. No, I'd say I haven't seen it either, but I've heard a lot about it. I want to hear your story.
Nick and I actually both differed greatly. I remember when you saw this, Nick, me and you differed. You liked it a lot more than I did.
I actually really, really loved this movie, and Leonardo DiCaprio is amazing. And this is, of course, an adaptation of F. Scott Fitzgerald's classic novel, in which, you know, this guy, he goes and lives in this house that's next to this opulent mansion, and he eventually ends up getting invited to one of Gatsby's parties, and he ends up meeting Gatsby, who's kind of this aloof, very, very rich guy who, it turns out, is in love with this girl, and through this whole different series of events, blah, 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 I won't get into it, but... Leonardo DiCaprio.
You just did.
Think about Leonardo DiCaprio, and I think some of the adjectives that you can use to describe him are charming.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
He carries himself so well. So this is kind of a movie that's molded after Leonardo DiCaprio, you know, the person. It's kind of completely, perfectly molded for him. It's just like a role he should easily be able to step into. So yeah, I don't have a lot more to say about it, but you know, he is great as Gatsby. It also has Tobey Maguire's in it.
Which
Joel
I think
Edgerton's
actually,
in
not
it.
To cut you off there, Nick, I actually think that's probably one of the better things I've seen Maguire do.
It is one of the better things that Maguire is. Leonardo DiCaprio is great as Gatsby. Carey Mulligan is also in it. That's the girl that he's in love with. She's great. Justin didn't like... Isn't she amazing?
I didn't like
Wayne?
The music. I'm sorry.
He
like,
hated
it.
It was cut with a modern soundtrack and with a modern
Man.
Score. Like a lot Baz of hip hop
always
music
does that.
And stuff.
Yeah, fuck that guy. Fuck Baz.
No. We don't want Australia hate, but like.
No, we don't hate Australia. We hate Baz.
No. I mean, the talent. But like, because he did that with Moulin Rouge and that kind of thing. That's his thing. So you have
I think
to dig
for
that
me,
if you want to, like,
I think
throw.
For me, it's so
I don't
perfectly
mind
it,
anything
worked.
Else
it
other
worked.
Than in Gatsby.
Justin's full of shit. Shut up.
No,
it
not
completely
you shut up.
It completely paralleled the extravagance of the Roaring Twenties here in America, and I know I don't know how much
I would have much rather
you
had
guys
music from that time
shut
period
your mouth.
Than had modern hip hop in it.
All right,
sorry.
But that, again, that's my number nine. It's the Great Gatsby. what is sure Wayne? Your number nine.
My number nine is Shutter Island.
Number nine? Are you serious? Jesus
you know
Christ!
This is the reason I think because like the movie freaked me out.
Most
right?
definitely what? On my list, by the way.
Really, Nick?
Okay. Oh, this is 100% on my list.
Yeah. Well, no. Look, this is. I didn't even know what to expect from this movie, but look, I think I know it's a great movie. I know it's a wonderful movie. It probably is lower on my list because it's a
number
little
nine.
More harrowing,
Jesus.
And I'm a bit of a Nancy. So, Nancy?
Nancy could be on your turn.
Yeah. And look,
was that an Archer
that
reference?
Happened,
please tell me
great.
It is.
But, please, sorry, go on.
Was that an Archer reference, the Mancy, or no?
Yeah, it was. I love me some Archer. I don't think I can see this movie again simply because of the thing with the kids that really bugged me.
Oh, my God. But again, this is on my list. Way fucking higher than number nine, Wayne.
Now you feel our pain about incest.
So wait,
anyway.
Are we not supposed to mention when something's on our list?
No.
Definitely. Please do.
Oh, no, yeah,
if it's on your list, mention it now. Let's
yeah, mention it if it's on your list, and then we'll all talk about it together.
Yeah, it's on my... It's actually, like, not my next one, but the one after that, so it's on there.
Well, don't tell us what it is.
And for
whatever.
Me, it's my number eight. So I'm next up, and yeah.
Oh, Paul, no, we're just cutting Paul off, and he's just not going to get to talk about anything, apparently, because we're all going to get to his films before he does.
Well, you need first, Nick, you need to shut up and let him talk.
All right.
No, it's all good. Shutter Island for me, I picked this supposed twist 20 minutes in, and for the rest of the film, I sat there going, this is this. Yep, this is this.
Yeah, this happens with
it
Paul.
It ruined the film for me completely.
Because you can't turn your brain
Ruined's
off.
Too strong a word. It just meant I didn't appreciate it the way I might have, but I thought it was telegraphed.
So you could tell what was going on.
And look, and you obviously love it a lot more, Nick. Tell us why.
I
so much.
Love Leonardo DiCaprio is brilliant in this role. He completely owns this movie. And as the plot, and fine, if you telegraphed it that early in the film, and you know, I mean, I get that, and whatever. But I think that the way that Leonardo DiCaprio's character kind of handles the shift and kind of starts to get this kind of paranoia and this anxiety that slowly kind of creeps over him and takes hold of him until he finally realizes that, yes, it's me all along. I'm number 67, et cetera, et cetera. All that stuff like that. I just think that Leonardo DiCaprio handles it masterfully, far better than many, many other films that are going to be on a lot of your lists, because this is way fucking higher on my list than number nine.
Again, you're rating it based on his performance. We're rating it as a film.
Yeah, I love the film too. And I actually bought this on Blu-ray with I got a two combo at Walmart when I bought the headphones earlier. It's The Aviator and Shutter Island.
Don't even mention that film yet, Nick, because I'm going to get to that film later.
I know you will, but yeah, that's... number nine. I'm glad it's on your list, Wayne, and everybody else, but yeah, number nine
is
criminal.
Yeah, it's on mine too, yeah.
So yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Well, my number nine was Titanic, so we're back to you guys for your number eight.
Justin?
All right. This is a movie?
It's a movie. Okay, good. Glad we got that out of the way.
Based on a true story. He worked with the iconic, one of the most iconic directors of all time, Steven Spielberg.
Oh, yeah.
It is Catch Me If You Can. It's one of the, I think it's where one of the first times that DiCaprio really got to play around a little bit, have some fun with one of his roles. I really enjoy this movie. It's one movie that I can watch actually anytime when I see it on TV, anytime mm-hmm. it pops up. I just really enjoy it. It's a fun time. It's by far, you know, it's not a perfect film. It's got lots of flaws, but it's Spielberg, Christopher Walken, Leonardo DiCaprio, and I love the story, and I love the period. I really love the period that it's set
in. As do I.
And I love Tom Hanks is in it, and I just really love the dynamic there. So that had to be on my list. I just really enjoy this film. So
totally
Catch
on
Me
board
If You
with
Can
this one.
Is number eight.
Yeah, I love Catch Me If You Can. It's on my list too. Way higher up. And actually, like, I love the feel of this movie, like, kind of above all else. Like, with the 60s styling and the lighting and the dialogue
exactly.
and the performances.
Exactly.
It's so easy and fun to watch. And he was great in it too. And everyone's kind of great in it. I mean, that's a huge cast.
My embarrassing confession, I have never seen it.
There's a whole list of movies you've never seen. Like, I need to, like, write this list and make you watch.
I didn't have, in the early 2000s, I didn't have a lot of money, and then I went to college in 2005, so there's a big kind of lull for me in, like, the 2001 to 2006 or 7 period where I didn't see a lot of stuff. So I'll say that, but I don't want to interrupt you guys because I know this is on some of your lists, so...
No, that's it. That means
not on my list.
Not on your list. That's because you're an asshole.
Paul, have you seen it? You just don't like it?
Yeah, I've seen it. I just thought it was completely and utterly average.
Oh, fuck off. It was not average. What?
Did nothing for me. I'm pretty sure I saw it at the movies, probably at your insistence, and I was like, yeah, what the fuck?
Wait a minute. You saw the movies. This movie came out in 2002, so you're talking about you saw this movie the year I graduated high school, which is like 15 years ago.
Holy Isn't fucking it, right? shit, you guys are so young.
You do realize that Paul and Wayne are both older than we are. Paul is five years my senior, and Wayne,
Nick,
happy birthday.
You didn't tell me.
Happy
you
belated
didn't
birthday, Wayne. Wayne's birthday was just recently. He's actually 41.
A week ago.
See, and I'm sitting here feeling old because I have 100 grays in my head. All right. So.
I have no
I apologize. I'm sorry, I didn't know.
No, it's all good. All good. All right. Well, there we go. That's my, not embarrassing, my acknowledgement of Catch Me If You Can being meh.
Yeah,
Nick,
I don't know what this crack is on.
Your number eight.
Okay, so my number eight is one of his many, many team-ups with Martin Scorsese. It is 2002's Gangs of New York.
New York, yep.
And this is on my list. Is this anybody on anybody else's, Justin? Yes.
It's not on my list.
It's in my top five, yeah.
Man, Paul, what the fuck is on your list if, like, all these films, none of them are on his list yet? Oh, my God.
You're going to be so pissed.
Oh, my God. But anyway, I mean, and the only thing I can say about this film is that he is definitely overshadowed by the brilliant, brilliant, brilliant performance of Daniel Day-Lewis as Bill the Butcher. And I haven't watched this film in a very long time, so I don't remember a lot about it. But I do remember DiCaprio being kind of... He really invests you in the journey of his character. He wants to avenge his father's death and everything like that. So he becomes part of Bill the Butcher's gang and everything like that. I love DiCaprio in this movie, and I remember enough about it to love DiCaprio in this movie more than my number 9 and my number 10. But... like I said, he's definitely overshadowed by Daniel Day-Lewis's Bill the Butcher. So again, that's my number. This is on who else's list? Justin and Wayne, is this on your list?
It is not on my list.
But
I thought about. I'll tell you why. Because it was a good enough movie, but for some reason I can't remember it that well.
Yeah,
so that
same
makes
for me.
It. Yeah, but also the thing that I do remember, which I had a problem with when I saw it, was during the big fight at the end, where they're all using knives and stuff. There's like a sequence or a few shots where. Someone just appears out of the smoke, cuts, and then goes back into the smoke. And then it happens like that. But I was like, what is that? What is that? Well, yeah, I don't know. It just seemed a bit... I don't know. It didn't work for me. I understand that this is a very popular movie and did some big business at the time.
I think it's hard to mention this film you know, in the context of, you know, anybody else but Daniel Day-Lewis.
Well, that character, that character is like... No, and especially here in America, is like iconic. Like I don't know how many people have that character tattooed on them or have shirts with that character. It's like that
is
character
he really?
Is like
I didn't
very
know. Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
He's very very embedded in the American culture here.
Yeah,
you watch the movie, the guy is the epitome of at that time who he thought he was a true American, and a lot of people take that very seriously here. But I had to ask you guys though, because you both seem like Wayne, you sound like you maybe only seen it once.
Yeah, I think I've only
seen it once.
Do you guys only watch movies once?
No, if I love a movie, I'll watch
it. Well, the reason I ask is because, I mean, this is Scorsese here, so I figure you maybe years down the line might have, like, caught it.
I've seen Goodfellas about 15 times.
Yeah, Goodfellas, like, 100 times.
Well,
like,
Goodfellas
to be fair,
I mean,
I've probably only seen Gangs of New York once as well.
Yeah, because you watch a lot of crappy TV.
You shut your fucking mouth.
Nick, you're watching Glee when you could be watching Gangs of New York for the second time.
I haven't watched Glee in years, and I will stand by the fact that the first season of Glee is great fucking television.
Yeah, no, it is. I watched it too.
It devolves into complete shit after that. We're getting off topic here.
Yeah, let's get back on.
I just had to ask. I'm just curious. Because...
Wayne, you're number 8.
Okay, well, yeah, thank you. My number 8 is The Wolf of Wall Street.
Number 8? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my God.
I know it's going to get nasty later on, isn't it? All right, here's my thing about Wolf of Wall Street, right? It would have been higher on my list, but it was definitely fucking 30 minutes too long, man. It was 30 minutes too long.
I completely disagree.
No, not for you.
100%.
Really? So you loved this movie?
I'm going to let you talk about it first. I'll get into it later. Go ahead.
Look, excellent performances, so yes. Definitely I can see why we'd be higher on Nick's list.
Brilliant performances.
And I love all this Wall Street shit. I just saw The Big Short as well, you know. I really do like that kind of thing. I know this was the birth of that when that novel came out, or that book came out. The only thing I can fault about this movie is its runtime.
Mm-hmm.
The other things mm-hmm. about it, all the cool scenes with the... mm-hmm. and Lamborghini, I loved all that too. Now I really want to hear what you think.
DiCaprio is at his absolute best. Like, the scene, and a lot of people will point to this as, you know, the fact that Leonardo DiCaprio is a great actor, and this is one of many, many scenes, but the scene with the Lamborghini, when he's outside of the club and he's on whatever drug he and Jonah Hill did before at the house like that, and he's, like, crawling across this parking lot and everything. But this film, and I'll disagree that it's too long because... I think the length of the film is a direct commentary on the excess of Wall Street during that time frame. And I think it's Scorsese's way of saying that this is how far they went. It went way too far. It went way too long. And I think the film is that long to emphasize that point. I know that turned a lot of people off, the length. And I get that a 3-hour film for a lot of people is like, God, get to the fucking point already. Holy shit. Yeah. But to me, that was the entire point. And DiCaprio is so charismatic. He's the lead character in this, but he's definitely the antagonist. He's not a guy that you can root for. He's definitely not a guy that you can agree with. You fucking would. But he's definitely not a guy that you want to side with or anything like that. But you can't help but be transfixed by him the entire time he's on screen. And I think that is 100% because of Leonardo DiCaprio.
I'd agree. He's like, he carries the whole thing off, and that's it. I mean, did you like it, Paul?
I did. It's in my list. It's coming up shortly. I thought this is an excellent Leo film. I think it's an
shortly.
Excellent
it better
Scorsese
be a long
film.
Fucking time up the list. Up sorry, the list. Sorry. God damn it.
See, Nick does this thing. Nick does this thing where he gets really upset, like almost upset enough where he has to go take a huge shit because it upsets him so badly because it's not higher.
I'm actually
on
the toilet right now.
I've dragged my microphone here with me. Excellent.
Paul's taking his favorite shits on this show too, let me tell you.
All right, clearly this is one of Nick's faves. It's going to be very, very high up.
Oh, it is.
My number 8 to get us back on track then is Shutter Island. So once again, throwing straight back to Justin.
God damn it, Paul.
For your number 7.
Well, it was actually already... It was actually Shutter Island. My number 7 is Shutter Island, so that can go right to Nick.
All
right,
so my number 7, and nobody has mentioned it yet, but we talked about it earlier tonight, it is Hugh Glass, The Revenant. I won't say anything more about it. This is my number 7.
Seven?
It yeah. Wow. Yeah, now the incredulous, now the incredulousness is coming back against me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Leo was good in this. Don't even get me wrong. Leo was really, really, really good in this movie, but he was not in any way the best part of this movie for me.
Yep, I agree.
And it wasn't any way near his best performance for me.
Again, I got to keep reminding myself, you're ranking this by Leo performances, the rest of us are ranking this by film.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This is absolutely, my number 7 is The Revenant. So, Wayne, we're over to you. Yeah.
Okay, my number 7, and this is just to make Paul vomit like a bitch, is Romeo and Juliet.
I expect to hear Paul like retching right now because I know how much he detested this movie.
I'm actually ducking his cock, just like he's swinging it around. It's like
you might hear a helicopter sound.
For any of you that are listening right now, go back a few episodes. It was in a Check It Out segment, I believe.
It was. Unbelievable, yes.
Yeah.
Unbelievable segment. Yeah, sorry. I still like Unfuckables better, but...
be the only one in the world, Nick.
I will gladly wear that crown. But Wayne had challenged Paul to watch this movie, and Paul came back the next week and was like, this movie was fucking garbage.
Which is just...
But I will say this. What? I will say this. It's not on my list.
Hey!
Oh, okay. No, hey, you know how much I like this film.
I don't understand why.
I didn't expect to when I saw it, but it was like, oh, look at this stuff. And usually I handle that, like, Shakespeare and make modernized thing. But it worked here for some reason. And, hey, that's me. It's the last time I found Homeland attractive.
So, Homeland, of course, being Claire Danes.
Yes. Romeo and Juliet. That was me. Number 7. Polly.
My number 7, I'm surprised it hasn't come up on anyone's list yet, because I can't imagine it coming up any higher than this, so I'm going to be the only person that... espouses its virtues, is The Beach, directed by Danny Boyle.
Not on my list.
Not on my list.
I imagine, Nick, not on your list either.
The Beach is not on my list, no. Yeah.
I will say this about The Beach. We went to Thailand a few years ago, and as you do in Thailand...
You saw Leonardo DiCaprio there, or...?
I got the shits, I couldn't go out and do anything. So we were at this sort of...
thing. You were shitting like a cement mixer.
I was like, it couldn't move 15 feet without taking a shit. It was amazing. Anyway, my girlfriend was good enough to come back with me to the place we were staying, the villa, and they had a home cinema there, and they had The Beach, and we whacked it on. I'd seen it once before and wasn't that impressed. But
as opposed to whacking it off.
Yeah, I don't think she would have come within 15 feet of that.
What are we saying?
Anyway, we sat down and watched it together, and I have to say, the first 40 minutes or so, until he gets to the beach, as a representation of Thailand, very fucking accurate.
It's
pretty good film in that sense, and it loses its way a little bit once we get into the Lord of the Flies area, but I liked it enough, and it's memorable enough for me to make number 7 ahead of things like Shutter Island and Titanic and Blood Diamond, because I just don't remember them that well.
I think it it suffered with me because I can't stand Virgin Ely Hooding.
Shutter Island, you bastard.
All right, so we're rolling around straight on to our number 6, Justin.
Number 6, we're already there?
We're there already, yes.
I almost lost count.
It's easy to do on this.
I'm horrible. I apologize.
Literally, the top 5 is just going to be us saying, this was my film, and next.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
We have so many on here. You guys already covered it, and I actually went and took a piss and masturbated and went and hung out in my closet while you guys were talking about it. It's him as Jordan Belfort in The Wolf of Wall Street. So right to you.
How is this your number 6? God, what is wrong with you people?
5 other movies. Guess what? Movies you probably haven't seen, Nick.
No, I'm sure he has, because I'll just jump in here ahead of the game. My number 6 is also The Wolf of Wall Street. So, Nick, now you can spread your hatred around the
podcast. All right, well, I'm going
to
go back.
Though, and I didn't get to interject this. I did love that fucking movie. I was actually
that movie's so good. Love that movie.
I honestly had a lot of people that complained. I love Scorsese. I love anything he does. I'll definitely put it above Shutter Island. That's for me, though. And I love film noir, and I love old stuff. I love period films. Mm-hmm. This, to me, was also a period film because it dealt with the 80s, which the 80s, you guys, is my favorite period of all time.
Right.
I'm an 80s kid, but I love it and everything about it.
Even though you still can't name 10 80s films that I hate.
No, I can.
You're so full of shit.
All right, there you go. 16 Candles. There you go. You don't...
What, John Hughes? Fuck you. Get out of here.
You've never even seen it.
I don't remember.
For those who are listening along to the countdown, that would be a reference to episode 10 of the Epic Film Guys. Just a little Easter egg for you there.
No, I'll leave it at that.
You maybe want to watch this movie again. How's that? That's something.
Well, on the fast forward button, apparently.
No. Well, yeah, actually, yeah, maybe the last 30 minutes. So, okay.
Paul's going to watch it at 1.5 speed, yeah.
All right, so, Nick, you're number 6.
I'm going back in time on this one, and I haven't seen this film in probably 20 years, so give me a little bit of forgiveness on this one. But it is 1993's What's Eating Gilbert Grape. As Arnie Grape, this was his major breakout role. He was in a couple things like Critters 3, as Justin said, before this. But What's Eating Gilbert Grape...
I think Critters 3 put him on the map. This is kind of just a follow-up.
Critters 3 made tons of money at the box.
Shut the fuck up. This was really his breakout role as Arnie Grape, and I think this is one of the purest where DiCaprio really invested himself in a character like head over heels, I would say. I don't have a lot else to say about it. Like I said, I'm going heavily, heavily off of memory here. And for 1983, that's a lot for me. So I've probably only seen it a couple of times, but that was both back in that era. But and I know it's got Johnny Depp in it, but whatever.
So he's great in it
that's
too,
that's my number six. So, Paul, we know your number six is also Wolf of Wall Street. So, Wayne, what is your number six?
My number six is The Revenant.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Thank you. Thank you, somebody. Thank you, somebody. Thank you. Wayne, I knew I liked you for a reason, besides the Superman Returns love.
Wayne, stop.
Besides that, and defending the Star Wars prequels against Paul's merciless onslaught.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This guy's like Hater McHatesville. Yeah.
Besides that.
Oh, number six. Come on. Nick's writing him a
good performance. I think that Wayne is going to take a spot on my lap because he doesn't really know what The Revenant is all about. You need to come over here and sit here, and buddy, I'll show you what The Revenant is all about.
I'm rolling up my ass as we speak.
And we have gone completely off the rails here, ladies and gentlemen.
Let's get to our top five, which might be very quick, but Justin, your number five, best Leo film.
There you go.
My number five is Django Unchained.
Hey, it's also my number five.
Absolutely. My number five as well.
Calvin Candy. I love him. He ate up that role. Love him to death.
Yeah, wait a minute. We didn't hear from Wayne. Wayne, this better be on your list.
It is on my list, but it's on my number five.
Because we're almost about ready to end the podcast there. Because you said, what doesn't make it?
Yeah, we're all just hanging up right now and just walking away.
Sorry, Justin. Please. Back to you.
That's all I had. Me and Nick, we like to blab a lot. We talk way too much. I'm sorry. That's what us Americans do. We just like to talk.
We do like to run our mouths an awful lot. But I'll say this. I'll say this about this movie.
I love him in the film. I love the film itself, too. Actually.
By the time the film gets to the Candyland, as it's known in the film, by the time the film gets to this point, and number one, you meet Samuel L. Jackson as the Uncle Tom in the film, and then you meet Leonardo DiCaprio. DiCaprio is, and make no mistake, he's over the top in this, but he is incredibly fun over the top. He is so much fun in this role.
He is over the top.
And he's definitely...
He's pitch perfect in the sense of...
Yes. Absolutely. This is perfect, and it's, you know, transcending Tarantino at least a little bit. You combine Tarantino's dialogue and Tarantino's staging with the talents of someone the caliber of Leonardo DiCaprio, and this is the result that you get. It's a brilliant, brilliant character. The fact that he didn't get as much awards love for this role, to me, is criminal. But, to be fair, Christoph Waltz was amazing.
Oh, the best thing about it was
so good. He's so fucking good. So it's hard to really hate them on it, but it's still, DiCaprio's fucking great in this Waltz. That's all of our number fives except for Wayne.
My number five is actually Inception.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
A little messed around? Okay, sure. I mean, we talked about that, but that's
we haven't talked about it. Again, five. Well, let's hear your better four films than that, but... All right, we did my number five. Justin, for your number four Leo film.
Actually, you guys already talked about it. Well, a couple of you did. It's Gangs of New York. It's him as Amsterdam.
Wow.
Fallon. It's up there. Really, really enjoy this film. I'm all about really good period pieces. I just love the set pieces in the film. I love everything they did in this movie.
Oh, this movie's so good.
So, for me, it had to be up there. Even if, honestly, we're talking about DiCaprio, even if he is overshadowed by Daniel Day-Lewis. But here it is. I mean, he's still in it, and he's still great. And I think he learned from that experience as well, especially working with, you know, a legend like Daniel Day-Lewis. I mean, it helps push you along.
It does.
So.
I would agree. Yep. Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that.
All right.
There it is.
Well, Nick, yes, your number four.
My number four. All right. This was finally the film that finally won Martin Scorsese an Oscar. This was his turn as Billy in The Departed.
Oh, you had to mention
that. I had to mention this, and I know this is probably on a lot of other lists here, I'm guessing.
Oh, yes.
It's my number four
as well. It definitely is.
Boom. Yes. I love this movie. And it's number one. It's DiCaprio's investment in this role that really kind of lets you dig into it. And you could say, obviously, of course, Scorsese won this Oscar for his
body of work.
Body of work, by far. But he masterfully crafts this gangster tale. And, you know, DiCaprio, of course, plays the undercover cop that goes undercover in Jack Nicholson's gang, while Matt Damon plays the gangster that goes undercover in the
Cops.
Boston police. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of the opposite role there. I love everything about this movie. I haven't watched it in a couple years, I'll be honest. But I'm a huge, huge, huge Jack Nicholson fan.
Who doesn't aside love from, this movie?
Aside from when he played the Joker in that fucking shitty Batman movie that nobody thought was.
And now comes the part
where I relieve you, the little people, of the burden
of your
failed and useless lives. But, as my plastic surgeon always said, if you gotta go,
you gotta go.
Go with a smile.
Go with a smile.
Oh, wouldn't be an Epic Film Guys podcast without that.
I was so hoping you guys would do some Batman. Okay,
we can't touch on it, but yeah, that's I don't have much else to say about it, but that again is my number four. His turn as Billy in The Departed.
You know, that was least like a Martin Scorsese movie, as like his style changed for me. In that it didn't look like Goodfellas, it didn't feel like a lot of his other stuff for me, except for maybe one scene. So that's why it was
I hadn't even thought of that before, but I'll agree with you. I'll absolutely agree with you.
Feels like, you know what doesn't feel like Martin Scorsese in that film?
What?
Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. but I love
him in that movie.
He's good in that movie.
He's great.
We're at Wayne's number three, I believe. Or no, number four. No, sorry, number four.
My number four then
is Django Unchained.
Okay, so
very nice.
As I mentioned, Departed for me, number four, great film, really enjoyed it. We are into the business end of the countdown. Number three, Justin.
We just got to it, was The Departed, so Nick.
Ah, that's right, we are racing through the last part as we expected.
Yeah, we're going to race through the last part. My number three is Jordan Belfort, Wolf of Wall Street. So over to you, Wayne.
My number three is Catch Me If You Can.
I loved
the crap out of this movie. Yeah, this was a great movie. Like I said, I like the feel of it.
Higher than you on heroin.
Shit!
I'm telling you.
All right, it's time to bring this countdown to a screaming halt.
Oh, shit.
My number three is a film that won't be on any of your lists, and I don't give a fuck.
Oh, what?
It is a Sam Raimi joint.
Oh, kiss my ass, really? This one?
It is The Quick and the Dead.
Fuck off.
Oh, my God.
Sharon Stone.
I'm so glad. I am so glad that you have this on your list. I honestly commend you, good sir, for adding this to your
list.
Is
this on your list too, Justin?
Would.
We all wanted to bone Sharon Stone. That's fine, right? But
look,
that's beside the point, Wayne.
Russell Crowe in his first Hollywood film. It's got Gene Hackman as the antagonist. And it has antagonist. Yeah. Even worse than an antagonist.
How many beers have you had at 11 o'clock in the morning?
Well, it's now 1:30 in the afternoon, so it's okay.
That is true. It is more than okay now.
Yeah. So, and it has, of course, Leo as Gene Hackman's supposed son. And this is a film about a set of duels in a western town where the winner takes all and a big prize. And Gene Hackman is the supposed best gunslinger of them all. Leo plays his cocky son who's good with the ladies, and he manages to get his way through to the very end of the gunfights. And look, he's fun in this film. I don't really give a shit about Leo, to be honest. The film is awesome. Sam Raimi directs it as if it's still this B-grade horror film.
Yes, that is an unmistakable style, I will tell you that.
Oh yeah, it definitely is, which is why it's so great. I agree. I think the film's great.
And that's,
I think it's great.
I'm right there with you, Justin. That's why it's so great. Had it just been shot like a typical Western, it would have been forgotten. And it has been forgotten. I'm the only person in the universe who's ever talked about this film in the last 10 years.
Damn straight.
So, actually, I just watched it, I think, last year or the year before.
Oh, okay.
It was actually on Netflix.
Nice.
Yeah, they had it on Netflix. So it was late one night, and I'm like, I forgot, because I hadn't seen it since I was younger, like a lot younger. I think it was on HBO or something when I was like 13 or something. And
Wayne, do you feel kind of lonely here?
A little bit.
No. Wayne's going to have this as his number one or two, so it's okay. All right, that's my number three, The Quick and the Dead.
Not bad.
So back to top twos.
Ooh, number two, Justin.
Number two? Hey, I just saw it a couple of days ago. You guys had it all over your lists. We just talked about it. We reviewed it. It is Leonardo DiCaprio as Hugh Glass in The Revenant.
Well played.
That's excellent.
Wow, that's high.
I could not get away from... We've seen this guy. We've seen this guy push himself forward in every single film. And and I agree with Paul in the simple fact that, you know, we see this man. There's not a lot of dialogue, but he's performing. And I love the fact that you see him through his expressions, his mannerisms, his eyes. You don't have to hear him talk. And a funny story about this.
Leo acts his fucking ass off.
I have to mention this.
Yeah.
I have to mention this because I thought this was hilarious. As soon as the credits started to roll at my showing of the film, a gentleman in the fifth row stood up and said, "Are you fucking kidding me? He had fucking 10 lines of fucking dialogue." You know what he fucking said? And I'm not even kidding you. That's where I got the whole 10 lines of dialogue thing from, because the guy was pissed. And you could see his wife. She was holding her hand in front of her face all embarrassed. And the guy was so mad.
So this guy clearly hated Mad Max Fury Road then, because there was like next to no dialogue in that movie.
Literally, the guy was so mad. But like, and I thought it was so funny, I couldn't help but laugh. But I mean, literally here, like, it just goes to show acting is way more than dialogue.
Absolutely.
It's about just 100
fucking percent more than dialogue.
So, well said. I had to give it to him. So The Revenant is my number two.
Nice. Wow. Great pick.
Good call.
Over to me. We've already talked about it. My number two is Shutter Island. So Wayne, over to you.
Wow. Okay.
Shutter Island, number two.
Shut up, Paul. God damn it.
Well, my number two is Blood Diamond.
Yeah. Oh, wow. No one else I gotta watch this movie now just off of Wayne's number two. Yeah, wow.
I'm gonna go watch it after I get done here.
Holy
It'll be like
shit.
1 a.m. by the time we get done. I'm gonna go watch it, though. Well, I want to hear what Wayne has to say about this.
I think that the reason I got this so, like, it just grabbed me so much is that, yeah, okay, so his performance, like, the convincing deal, excellent, right? But more than that, the way that he goes about getting his blood diamonds, or the way that he goes about infiltrating aspects of Africa and things like that, is so ballsy, and he could die at any minute kind of thing. The character has a really good arc towards the end. It's still not resolution, like, completely, but I was nothing more... I was just impressed. Every scene I was impressed. And I dug it. So,
okay.
Yeah, right. That's me.
My number two. And I went back and forth on this. My number two and my number one. I agonized over the last 24 hours. I've stuck it at number two, The Revenant. I hold the right to prop it up to being number one in the future.
I'm intrigued. Right, I'm intrigued to find out what your number one is, but I have a feeling I know what a lot of your number ones are going to be.
Well, let's hear them. Let's hear our number ones then.
Justin.
Starting with Justin, yeah.
This is the film that I think broke it down for me. This film is very, very special to me. It may not be the same film you guys are talking about, but I have a feeling it will be. It's the first time I saw this man completely vanish into the performance, into the role of another living human being that had lived, walked, and breathed on this planet.
I knew it.
It is Leonardo DiCaprio as Howard Hughes in Martin Scorsese's The Aviator, one of my favorite films of all time, let alone DiCaprio or Scorsese. This is a movie I watch once a year. I just absolutely adore this film. And of course, on Blu-ray, of course, on good quality, because this film is shot beautifully, it's acted beautifully, it's everything about this movie.
So wait, I've got to ask, Justin, not to cut you off there, but Paul or Wayne, is this your number one?
Nope.
I haven't seen it.
Shit! Oh, shit!
I haven't seen it.
That's amazing! That's good. All right.
I'm going to watch it now.
No, I'm intrigued. But Justin, continue.
The point being here is that ever since I was younger, growing up, I heard a lot about Howard Hughes. My grandfather talked a lot about him, and I watched a lot of older films. It's that I remember being a kid, and then later on in life, seeing The Aviator, kind of like, you know, touching back on my past with knowing who the Howard Hughes person is, and seeing this amazing performance. Like, Leo just literally gets so deep into who Howard Hughes was, what he cared about, what he strived to be. You know, he's revolutionary in more than many ways, especially with aviation and in film. So many great performances in this film as well from so many different actors, Alec Baldwin being another one in there, among many others. I just adore this film. It's Scorsese at his best. It was a passion project. And I know that recently there's been a lot of talk over the past couple of years of Nolan actually tackling a Howard Hughes biopic as well. But let alone, I don't see anything touching this. The Aviator, Leonardo DiCaprio's Howard Hughes is my number one.
I'm gonna go watch it now.
Shit.
Well, nicely played, Justin. Straight to you, Nick, for your number one.
I'm crazy kinds of interested in what Paul and Wayne's number one is, but my number one is without a doubt Leonardo DiCaprio's absolute best best performance, overshadowed very, very much by his co-star, Kate Winslet. It is 2000. It is 2008's Revolutionary Road as Frank Wheeler.
He's
fucking brilliant in this film. I don't even care. I don't give a shit. He's so fucking brilliant in this film.
Go, Nick's rants. Nick's rants. Go.
Shut up. Shut up.
No.
Wrong.
Now shut the fuck up and let me do my job.
He is so fucking good in this movie, and he just, like, as many scenes as, like, if you imagine Kate Winslet as an actress just standing at a punching bag and just knocking it over 1,000 times, he is standing on the other side just knocking it right back at her, and he's brilliant. This is the film, and ever since the Oscars for this year, when he got snubbed, he did not get nominated for this role. I have believed in the Academy Awards a lot less, and I've cared about the Academy Awards a lot less since this film came out. This is a brilliant film. This was Sam Mendes directed it of American Beauty fame.
Yep.
And it's hard, really, to compare him. Michael Shannon, of course, with the brilliant, brilliant supporting role that got nominated, and the only reason he lost was because Heath Ledger died that year. He was, of course, next to Kate Winslet, anybody looks like fucking an amateur. But yeah. This role was brilliant.
I did not see this coming.
Oh, my God. I can't believe this isn't on anybody else's list, and I hate every one of you for it.
I knew it.
Well, it's not on my list because I haven't seen
it. Neither have I.
God, how have you not? God damn.
I keep hearing how boring this fucking
movie is. It seems like a chick flick.
Holy shit. It's such an acting tour de force, and
right,
DiCaprio, and especially when you culminate in these scenes, when you just let off the reins, you know, it kind of takes the Titanic to its next logical conclusion, as if they've been in a kind of a stale marriage for a number of years, and they just go at it, and they just unleash on each other, and it's so brilliant, and like Justin
sounds
said,
like my house.
Justin had said that this was with The Aviator, and my embarrassing confession is that I have not seen The Aviator, but I picked up a Blu-ray today at Walmart, along with Ex Machina. I picked up a double pack of Shutter Island and The Aviator, so I will now get to see it. But like Justin said, that DiCaprio immerses himself and disappears into the character of Howard Hughes. DiCaprio disappears into the character of Frank Wheeler, and he conveys every single emotion of this husband who is, you know, he was very much in love at one point, and he kind of just gets to this stale point in the marriage where he's just kind of not really invested, and then they reignite their passions, and then the film, I don't even want to spoil it for you guys since you haven't seen it. You have to fucking watch this movie. It is fucking brilliant. DiCaprio is so fucking incredible in this movie.
Nick, don't cry.
I love
don't
it. It's my number one. I'll let it go at that.
Nick's very soft recommendation is you should see Revolutionary Road.
My very soft, kind of, sort of on the side, like a little bit, if you've got the extra time recommendation,
yeah,
is Revolutionary
Road. Yeah, if you're not watching Glee
my number one is Revolutionary Road.
All right,
Wayne, it's to you.
Bring this home, number one.
Bring this home. I hate to drop it down like this, but mine is The Departed. I liked.
Yeah,
that movie so much. Just loved it. Sorry, I loved it so much. Departed is my favorite movie of his.
Thank you.
Yeah,
and equally, perhaps anticlimactically, after Nick's very impressive rant there about Revolutionary Road. My number one is Inception. I think this is the best. The best film Leo has been in. Okay. So
I need to completely rethink that film, I think, now.
You were talking about performance. I can see this is an ensemble film where Leo is good in it, as opposed to being a Leo film where everyone else gravitates around him.
Wow.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, you've got Tom Hardy, you've got Cillian Murphy, you've got Michael Caine, you've got Marion Cotillard, you've got all these people all coming together and creating this great ensemble. It's basically a heist movie in someone's head. How
very
much
true.
Cooler?
I guess I can see how this is getting there for you, given that. that
premise. Shot wonderfully with an intriguing premise, with a fantastic ending. And anybody who thinks that they need to have it wrapped up for them in a pretty little bow, you've missed the point.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
100%. Holy shit, do I agree with that.
And that's my number one. Oh, so there it is, our countdown of the 10 best Leo films. Woo! One has been
boom!
A very
I just wanted to say...
Do we have any honorable mentions?
Oh, yes, please. Yes, any honorable mentions for anyone?
Justin?
Yeah, go on.
Growing Pains.
Jesus Christ.
That might sing again.
Well, Paul, plug your ears. My honorable mention is Romeo and Romeo and Juliet. Baz Luhrmann, 1986.
Damn straight it is.
Fuck yeah, Wayne. I really hope Paul didn't hear that, and that he doesn't pay attention to this in editing, because he'll cut it out. He'll completely cut this whole part out. Any mention of Baz Luhrmann, he's going to completely eliminate from this list.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens in the edit. Any others
for you guys?
That's it for me.
Okay, I've got a horrible honorable mention.
I just want to make sure that I get in here.
Yeah.
And this should not be edited out. that we
edit this part.
I truly starting appreciate right here. Being invited onto your guys' podcast. This was probably one of the best experiences doing a podcast in my entire life, because I get so extremely bored with listening to Nick talk and say the same shit over and over again every week. But no, in all reality, you guys are fantastic, and I just want to take the time, on me and Nick's behalf to thank you for inviting us on.
I won't even let Justin speak on my behalf. I will echo that sentiment 100%. You guys do a fantastic show, and I'm very, very happy to listen to your show week to week and hear that you guys shout us out and give us all kinds of love, and I can only reflect that back to you 100-fold. You guys do a really, really fun show. You guys have a great rapport. It's so much fun to listen to you, and I hope that this is the first of many crossovers, because this has been a fucking treat and a half. Even though none of you had Revolutionary Road on your list, this is still
been a treat. I promise you, next time Nick won't talk as much. I'll keep him shut up.
If I can jump in and Wayne, please weigh in too.
Please.
It's been a pleasure to become involved with you guys, and to have you on has been a privilege for us. You guys shout us out every week as well, and you promote us on Twitter, Nick, and we wouldn't have half listeners we do without you. So it is becoming a bit of a love fest, but that's because there's a lot of love here. And
they're 100%, yeah. And Australia, not to cut you off there, Paul, I'm sorry, but Australia is our second biggest market. And in no small part because of all the love that you guys give to us, and we, the back and forth that we've had here, and not to downgrade the Potter and Family movement, because I think both our podcast and your podcast were both very, very happy to be a part of that. But this predates that. We found you guys very, very early on in our run, and I haven't gotten through your entire backlog yet. There's probably 6 or 7 episodes I have yet to finish.
Maybe she didn't bother.
I've already listened to the early ones. I've already listened to like the first 5 or 6 episodes. So I've gotten through the growing pains, as you would. It's been an honor and a privilege to be a guest on your podcast. We're going to have you guys on our podcast. And this is going to be the first crossover of many, I feel. I really
And do. We have discussed off mic, but there may be a little bit of coverage when co-hosts can't be around. So this is the beginning of to quote Bugs Bunny, a beautiful friendship. So thank you so much.
Couldn't agree you're going to tie my rifle into a bow.
Yeah, well, we're not allowed to have rifles over here in Australia, so that might be necessary if you're going to visit.
So, that's it.
Any other honorary mentions?
I have a really weird one that you're going to laugh at. I really dug The Man in the Iron Mask when I was younger.
I'm not even taking that away from you, Wayne.
I'm glad you mentioned this, because I thought about this. I actually thought about putting
you
it on
quiet,
my list.
Paul.
Because
you don't
I
have
liked
to make
it
him feel
when
better.
I was a kid.
Just pay out of him like I do. It's fine.
Look, it was a joke of a thing, but it was fun to watch. What?
I liked it. Hey, when I go back to my childhood with this shit, man.
Me too.
I went back and I thought, I liked that movie as a kid, but then honestly, I think I tried to rewatch it a couple years ago, and I'm like, nah.
And it was shit. Yeah.
I don't think it would hold up, but I have fondness for it. So.
All right,
I'm not even that concerned.
Before we wrap up today, then, can I get you guys to tell where people can find you on the web and listen to your podcast?
Nick
has to do that job, because he knows if you guys listen to our podcast every week, he always asks me that question, and I have no
This is because Justin really doesn't do a fucking thing. You can find us, our podcast. We're hosted at Podbean, so you can find our podcast at epicfilmguys.podbean.com. Join the discussion with all we discuss. Any new movie news that comes out, Justin's managing our Facebook page at facebook.com/epicfilmguys. I manage, of course, the Twitter at Epic Film Guys. Dicks in the mouth. The Instagram.
That's Justin's list, not me.
The Instagram at Epic Film Guys. And video reviews that we do talk about infrequently are over at youtube.com/epicfilmguys. And why? And just to give a shout out, you guys are on Podomatic, correct?
Podomatic.
That's right. Yes.
If you want to email us, it's thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
Yep.
And is
on
there
Facebook.
Else? Facebook?
Yeah. Just search slash for... the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews, or you can search for that. And yes, we are on podomatic.com, where we are slowly rising up the rankings there. Thanks again, in no small part, to Epic Film Guys and hashtag Pod and Family.
They're also on Twitter at thecountdownpc. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you followed us, if you followed the Epic Film Guys to this episode, because of course we're going to promote this on our page and everything like that, but if you followed us to this page, if you're not listening to Paul and Wayne by now, if this hasn't sold you on these guys, nothing will. And maybe if Wayne would talk with a little bit of a lisp, we'd be able to get into that.
Nick, shut your mouth. I came on and made a cameo on this show because I was fucking paid. I'm going to be paid with dicks in the mouth as I want and I requested. That's why I'm here. Okay.
I'm flying over soon.
Wayne will be there in April to pay up.
That's right.
Yeah, that is true. Wayne is going to be coming stateside, and I you know what, and Paul and I had talked about it before, but I think it's okay to safely announce that now, that I, at least myself, maybe Justin, if we can arrange the schedules, but sure, at least myself, I will be guest hosting the countdown.
Most definitely. During those months.
I'm going to love hearing that.
Yeah, it'll be great fun. So you're going to hear a lot more from both of our podcasts over the coming weeks. In fact, it feels a little bit like cheating that I have to sort of say this now. Next week's show for the countdown, we are doing another crossover with the UK podcast, the Something Something podcast. At least that's the plan at the minute.
I love those guys. I love those, but they haven't put out an episode in like a month, so I miss them. I want them to come back.
Yeah, they need to come back. So if you're listening, Dan and Kev, get on that. And then the week after that, we are doing our Hateful Eight review and our countdown of the top 10 westerns of all time, according to us.
That sounds great. I'd love to chime in on that one there. I won't even lie.
Holy shit, top 10 westerns. I don't even know how I'd get into that.
More to come from both of our podcasts. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining
thank
us.
You.
It's been as big a pleasure as you can imagine. Thank you for giving
us
your Saturday
night. That's
so
much fun, man. This has been
the pleasure is all on this side of the microphone, I assure you.
Yeah, and in my hand and in my pants.
What better way to end the podcast on than that note? If your hand's on your pants, put it there. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And I'm Nick.
And I'm Epic Film Guy Justin. You are listening to the Countdown Podcast.
Thank you very, very much, Paul and Wayne, for having us on.
Fantastic. Thanks again. See you next week.
Cheers.